Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Face Rocker Podcast, episode 43. I am your co-host, Des Daly, joined by...
Benji Daly.
My brother. First and foremost, also our podcast producer. Benji's usually sitting in the corner right over there. We don't have a camera on him just yet, but we're going to get that taken care of real soon.
Mom always said I have a face for radio, so doing that for you guys.
Maybe. Maybe this is true. But you're on camera today, Benj. So here we are introducing Face Rocker Podcast, episode 43. If you guys haven't noticed, we record these live reads separate from the episodes themselves. Mm-hmm. We're recording this right now. This is Wednesday morning.
Yep.
And we're going to cut this in and then upload this tomorrow. You're going to be listening to this a day from now, Thursday. Yep. But we recorded this, about a month ago, right?
Yeah, the guest came in about a month ago. It was, I believe, the day after the Xbox One launch party, correct?
Oh, that's right. I remember coming back from the Xbox One launch party. Our guest was there as well. Today, we are joined by the very talented, very beautiful Jessica Chobot.
Mm-hmm. She's the host of Nerdist News and also of IGN fame.
Yeah, that's right. You would remember her from IGN. She now records Nerdist News, right beneath us.
Actually, right underneath
their set.
Feet.
It's just beneath our podcast booth. That's how we were able to steal her away from her very busy duties over at Nerdist and get her to come in and talk about her new game. She's now a video game writer.
Yeah, she's been writing Daylight, survival horror.
If you guys are into survival horror games, this one's really rad. You're going to enjoy this conversation today. But we get into all sorts of hostful conversations and just all game stuff.
I mean, she's a true gamer, so you guys pretty much
she's legit.
Sit around and just talk games.
She's more of a gamer than I am.
Yeah.
She's schooled us for sure.
Yeah, she knows her stuff.
But Freddie gets to nerd out.
So...
We're going to get right to the podcast in just a second, but I got to do my sponsor thing,
Yep.
I know you guys don't like the, some of you don't like the sponsor thing. Some of you don't care. And, for not caring, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, thanks.
But look, we put these podcasts out for free, Benji, his labor putting this podcast together costs money. These mics cost money. There's a guy behind the scenes. We got Alex recording and mixing, and we got Ben who edits and posts everything. It's a whole machine to put these together. And put them up for you for free every single week. So it really helps. We get sponsors to come in and kick us a little bit of dough to keep the machine going, so to speak. So today we're really proud to present Squarespace.
Yep, squarespace.com.
Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to build your own custom website, portfolio, or online store. You're an editor. You're a director. You're a music producer, you're whatever, you're a creator, right? Everyone's a creator in the 21st century, and you got to get yourself out there. You need a website, but you don't know where to start. I wouldn't know where to start.
I would have no clue.
You could learn CSS, I presume, but that's got to be impossible.
Again, I would have no clue.
So go to squarespace.com where it's all drag and drop. They got a lot of really easy to use templates and whatnot, and you don't have to spend any money today. You build the website that you like. If you love it and then you decide to keep it, then you pay. So there's no credit card required to sign up. And if you guys go there and use the promo code ROCKETJUMP, you get 10% off your first purchase. And monthly rates start at, I believe, only $8 a month. So it's incredibly cheap.
Yeah.
You guys can have your own website as easy as 1, 2, 3. And that's brought to you by squarespace.com.
Mm-hmm. Use that promo code ROCKETJUMP.
Yes. One last bit of housekeeping. Don't forget to check us out on iTunes.
Subscribe on iTunes.
Subscribe. It really helps the podcast. That's how these sponsors track podcast metrics and so on and so forth. So it makes it easier, again, for us to put these casts together and get them out there for you and keep them free to the public. So without further ado, Face Rocker Podcast, episode 43, with our guest, Jessica Chobot.
Welcome, everybody, to the Face Rocker Podcast. Hold on. See, I'm so bad at these intros, Des. I'm sorry.
We normally don't do them.
But to my right, we have Des Daly.
Hello.
Matt Arnold.
Hi.
Myself, Freddie Wong. And we are joined today by the awesome Jessica Chobot.
That's correct.
I knew it. I've always seen it, and I've said it in my head. I'm like, it's got to be two. Yeah, nailed it.
Everybody tries to make it like French, like Chabot.
Oh, really?
Is that Chobot?
It's just Chobot. It's not even, I mean, it's kind of sort of my actual last name. It's like a previous ex-husband's last name. that I just kept because it happened like right when work was taking off. Mm. And so it just kind of stuck. And apparently from what I've heard, it's like some weird Ukrainian background thing. So
it's recognizable.
Robot is...
What?
The word robot is a Ukrainian or Czech word, isn't it?
I have no clue. Oh, but it sounds like that's
dude,
would
that
be
was
true.
Like I you can you that was me turning on the basement of my knowledge and seeing like a little glimmer of something and be like, wait, I remember reading this somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that's what the
it's
bot
like Ukrainian or Russian for automaton or something like that. Yeah.
Huh. Something go like that. Figure.
Anyway, there you go. Nerding out here.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I wanted to just jump right into is your writing on a survival horror game.
Yes.
And first of all, I think survival horror is great. I love survival horror because I think that that's one of the only genres of the one of the many, but one, I think one of the primary genres in video games where video games kick the snot out of movies. Mm-hmm. Like I've never been scared.
Or at least have the potential to.
Have the potential to. Absolutely. I've never been like scared during a movie. I've been like or frightened or jump scared. Mm-hmm. But like when I play like Silent Hill 2,
that's
like
I'm
like I'm done. I need to go walk around outside. Mm-hmm. Like I wake up in the hospital and it's nighttime in the game. And I'm just like nope. Mm-mm. Nope, we're done.
I actually have a pretty good story about that. Okay. So Silent Hill 2 is one of my favorite like horror genre games ever of all time, of any kind of offshoot of it. And sorry, I got a little pizza stuck in my throat. And I was playing, we had a finished basement at the time, and so I was playing downstairs in the basement, you get sucked into a game, you start losing track of how long you're down there for, and then all of a sudden, I realized I was sitting alone in the dark in the basement. I was like, oh, no way. So I actually called my husband on the phone upstairs and was like, I called him from my cell phone downstairs, upstairs on the house phone. I was like, I'm downstairs in the basement and I'm really scared. Can you come get me? Because something's going to get me on my way out. And he did. He had to come and get me because I was just absolutely terrified. Like Silent Hill 1 and 2 were, in my opinion, 2 is the best. 1 was amazing in and of itself because it was 1 and it was the intro for everything. Time, but 2 had something special with it, with the
weird
ending and the psychological drama of it all. And then 3 was okay, and then 4 it was just like bleh. Yeah.
Although 4 did one of, I think, my favorite things in the game that's in a while, which was, I don't know, you guys play 4 at all?
No, that's not the Wii one, right?
That was Room.
That was the Room.
Oh,
which was
yeah.
basically it was another game that kind of got tweaked into a little bit. Mm-hmm. Kind of in the same way that like Lethal Weapon 4 and Die Hard 3 with Die Hard with Vengeance was actually a Lethal Weapon movie. Kind of like that, but for video games. Because one of my favorite things that I did in that was during the regular third-person segments, it's like, you're third-person, you're running around. But when you got back to your apartment, the whole point is, like, you're just stuck in your apartment. You don't know why you can't get out of it. And it's like this, and a portal opens up, and you go into these areas. But in your apartment, it's like the one safe place. You could, like, save as first person in the one safe place.
Oh, I think I know where you're going
with
this.
And then you could save, and you're like, okay, I'm back here, and it's good. Then halfway through the game, they pull the rug out from under you. And all of a sudden, like, the ghosts and stuff get infected into your apartment. So it's not even safe there anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's just like... something this entire time has been a point of psychological like relief because you're like, okay, at least I'm back in my apartment. You look out the window, it's traffic's moving around outside. It's just normal. You're back in the real world. They take that away from you, and it's really distressing because it was for that whole game. It's like the one thing you could look forward to. Like, okay, but as soon as I get to the apartment, I can save. I can take a breather here. But then it's like from that point, I was like, no more breathers.
Awesome. Well, see, and that's the thing. I thought the concept was great. Like, I really thought they could have gone somewhere really, really good with it. But unfortunately, the thing, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree, but the thing that really kind of bummed me out about it and kind of made it like the beginning of the downhill slope for that series. Was that, one, the levels that you did visit were the stereotypical same level that you always visit, which is like an orphanage, the subway system, blah, 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 blah. So that was one thing. But it wasn't too, too bad. But then you ended up actually having to go back there and all those same levels all over again.
Yes.
The whole,
horrible,
if I remember correctly,
the whole
thing. And you're just like, oh, God, I have to do this all again? What for?
Yeah,
and so
it's
that
the most, it's the horrible.
Off.
Yeah,
that's like the least scary thing.
No.
The only game that pulled it off, I don't know if you, did you play Eternal Darkness?
I did not.
Eternal Darkness.
They did a thing where they would do the same areas, but it was different time periods. So
that's a little
really
different.
Changed
a
lot. So you'd do a church that was like, scary.
Because
it was demons, and then you'd play that church during World War II, and it was like the hospital, and like people were dying. There is the same location, but
it was clever recontextualization.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, it's been a long time since I played it, but if I remember correctly, if there was any difference, it was so minor that you felt like you were just still doing the same
super
thing.
Phoned in, and then also, like, nothing is more annoying than because, like, finished the new Halo game. You want to know why? Because I played exactly 30 minutes of it, and then my save didn't save. So then I was like, ugh, I don't want to go through the first 30 minutes of this game again. Oh, man. Literally, that's it. Just half an hour of just having to redo that first bit. And it's like, guess what, guys? The rest of this game. I was like, yeah. At that point, as soon as I was like, is this going to go? I'm done. Yeah.
What survival horror games do you like now? It seems like the genre kind of died, and now they're kind of coming back with indie games with like Amnesia and stuff like that.
Well, so that's kind of it. That's kind of why we ended up getting involved. I mean, originally, the plan when we started with Daylight was that it was going to be a self-published, what's the word I'm looking for?
Independent. Sorry,
a little bit of a hangover today due to the Xbox One launch. But yeah, I mean, it was all independent. Mm-hmm. It was completely out of pocket for Zombie. It was going to be self-published. You know, I was six people on the team, and the whole goal was we were just going to make like a fun horror genre indie game, mm-hmm. similar to like an Amnesia or a Slender Man, yeah. because we liked those so much, and I loved seeing how that was kind of becoming popular again, and kind of those indie titles were allowing the genre to kind of come back in a unique way that I don't think anybody had thought of up to that time.
Well, because they saw Silent Hill losing all this money, and they're like, okay, as a big publisher, we can't.
All the big stealth games have become like Dead Space or action titles now.
Yes, I was
going to
actually say that. Yeah. Like even Resident Evil, it's kind of, you know, lost its way a little bit as far as the horror genre aspect of it was. And so I feel like, okay, well, now we're kind of delving into those waters again, but in a unique way. So that's kind of why we started it. And so things like Amnesia, oddly enough, even though it's not, I guess you would say horror, but Dear Esther was a big one for me, just because of the vibe and the surroundings and that feeling that you got while you're playing it.
Atmospheric storytelling, which is good for horror rather than,
perfect. So that one, Silent Hill 2, obviously, and Silent Hill 1, huge inspirations just from my personal past. And Gone Home's another good one.
Yeah, Gone Home was
great. I mean, those are more recent one, but the more and more that I see these coming out, the more excited I get because I'm like, oh, God, we were just, one more good game to add to that pile. And so, but I think I kind of got onto that, like, horror genre path, like, why those are some of my favorite games, aside from the Silent Hill series in and of itself. But I don't know if you guys remember this. But do you remember a game called Seventh Guest?
Yes.
I loved it.
Oh, my God.
Awesome.
The freakiest terrifying. Game ever. It scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, and I was like, I was a little kid playing that. My parents, if they knew better, probably wouldn't have let me play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But it just was so like, oh, my God. And I never solved any of the puzzles. I was an idiot. I was like in fifth grade or something ridiculous.
And then even then, you could go back to the library and get the hints. And you just got three hints, you would solve the puzzle.
Yeah.
I was still scared to even walk down those stairs. I was like, I'm not going back to the library. I just love the house.
Clicking on things. And the one thing that I remember from that game more than anything, well, one of the one things I remember from that game more than anything else, and it was me walking down the upstairs hallway.
Yes, the first time
you click the picture, and all of a sudden it goes vroom, and the hand comes out and pushes up again, and I just lost my mind. So that kind of, I think, planted the seed, and then, you know, things like Silent Hill 1 and 2. Mm. I actually really enjoyed Fatal Frame 1 and 2.
Yeah, Fatal Frame.
The most anime of horror.
But it's smart because it makes you feel so helpless.
And the underlying concept is brilliant for it, which is, for those of you who aren't familiar, you gotta catch ghosts, but the only way you catch them is by going to first-person view and staring through a magic camera. Not a magic cool gun or Ghostbusters suit. No, it's a camera. They have to stare at a ghost and take a picture.
What's funny is when I actually started the game, that was the reaction I had when I realized, I mean, I just picked it up because it looked scary on the store shelf. Sure. I didn't even really investigate it much. It was way before I started in the industry and I grabbed it. I'm like, this looks cool. And then when I got it home and they're like, oh, use your camera. I'm like, oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah.
And I'm like, whatever, I bought it, so I'm going to give it a shot. And by the time you get to the one room where the first ghost you encounter starts and you hear that like weird bum 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 bum, and then all of a sudden you turn and it's like all up in your face. It's just like, oh God, I can't.
It was terrifying.
The game was like, how do we make a game with nothing but jump scares? It works for me.
Yeah.
It works really well. Well, because we've mentioned this before, games go in the opposite trajectory as horror movies. Horror movies, like, the audience and the character gets weaker and weaker and feels more and more helpless, and it's stripped from their material, stripped from their weapons, stripped from their companions and loved ones, etc. Games are like, hey, by the end you have a fucking rocket launcher, shoot nuclear weapons, and that's why I can't stand Dead Space. By the end of Dead Space, I'm like, I'm a superhuman. How am I possibly?
By the beginning, I was like, I have this awesome gun that can cut anything. I was like, I don't feel scared at all. I feel like the biggest badass in space since Harrison Ford.
Send everything at me, hell. Like, all your demons, dragons, I'll shoot them.
The flip side to that, though, just to play devil's advocate, man. In Skyrim, I've got this like ridiculously high level player, and I don't even care. Yeah. I'm like, I'm just going to run through this town and murder you all. And it's still just as fun.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's fun, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But not necessarily scary. Well, so you're writing it, right?
So I'm writing it,
What's that process like? We've write here, but not video games.
It's been very educational. Well, I mean, obviously, this is my first time ever doing it. Not necessarily just like writing, but writing for the game. And what made it doubly difficult was the fact that it's randomly generated. So we had to figure out how to tell the story, knowing that any of these items and any of the storyline might pop up within this world that we built at any time. So it's very, very found item heavy. Mm-hmm. We're calling it a game. There is some gameplay aspects to it. I prefer calling it an experience. Mm-hmm. It's one of those kind of things, which I'm completely fine with, because those are just as fun for me, I think.
Yeah, going home is one of the best experiences I've had in a long time. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's similar like that, where in going home, you're finding these little notes and things of that nature, and that's what's telling you the story. And in fact, well, I don't know if it's going to change or not, but as of right now, it's not very VO heavy. So I don't think we're going to have things where, like in Gone Home as an example, all of a sudden the narrator pops in randomly on you, because you find these tapes and stuff. This, I think, it's going to be more just like notes and journals and items and things of that nature. And so that was tough, trying to wrap my head around it. And then the other thing that was really hard is I'm, you know, very excited about it. I was stoked to be even asked in the first place. So, of course, in my zeal, wrote this like just huge storyline. And I think I kind of got a couple people to drink the Kool-Aid with me. And so we were like, and then we're going to do this. And then we're going to do this. And listen, I still think that our idea was pretty good. But at the end of the day, even with Atlas being the publisher, you know, the budget's just not big enough and we just don't have enough time. So we had to cut a lot, which just burned. But I completely understand why. And it actually, the thing that I thought was really cool about having to go through that was I have now learned even more now just how much work it goes into making a game. Yeah. And let's say you pick up a bad game, and I'm not trying to make excuses for everybody, but let's say you get a game and you're slightly disappointed by it. You know, it might not always be because the person's trying to screw you. It might just be because they just don't have time.
Yeah. Right.
This happened, that happened, somebody left, somebody on the team's not a team player. Like, luckily at Zombie, everybody is a team player. Yeah. It's actually been really great working with those guys. But, budget's kind of, you know, you only got so much time and money.
That's what we learned. Well, that's what I learned from, I worked at Disney Interactive for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, everybody I know worked harder than anybody I've ever met to make the shittiest possible game.
Same.
But that's what it was. We had $300,000. You had to work with a Japanese developer who was, you know, they worked. We had people go to hospitals. Like, they worked 20 hours a day. Like, you guys can't work 20 hours a day, like, over there.
Yeah.
And it's just, you don't have the time. You don't have the money. No, you don't have the ability to really look at your game. It's like, you can work so hard to make the best game possible. And
sometimes it just doesn't work out. Yeah. That's not going to be Daylight's problem. It's going to be awesome. But I'm just saying.
It's the exact same. It's Fox. Like, one of my producers' bosses, like you'd sit down and they would just talk about games, and they were like the most on point. Like, yep, that's exactly what's wrong. They knew everything about it. They were analytical. They knew it. And he would sit there just pound his head on his desk. And then when he left, he went over to Disney, and the best thing, his name was Ryan. And when he left, one of the gifts we gave him was it was a copy of the game Jumper. With the IGN reviews and stuff on it, which was like in the Metacritic reviews, which rated it as, I think, one of the worst games ever made of all time. he was just like, that sometimes happens. You sit here and you spend all these hours and
I'm just
it's such a complex process.
Well, that's the thing. And honestly, like, God, one, just being in the industry, so that's its own growth within myself. That was really poorly said, but you know, that was my own like, yeah, like come to Jesus out moment. But just gaming in, just being in the industry overall has been a come to Jesus moment, because I just, it's like it forces you to mature.
Yes.
And acknowledge, like, this is a business, you know, yeah, and as passionate as people are, you know, it's not necessarily their fault that these things. So the whole, like, kind of reactionary fanboyism that I had when I started, yeah, because I was just like, yeah, I'm going to just take over the world and blah, 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 yeah, blah, and you guys don't know what you're doing. That's just been pissed away. Like, that's gone. And thank God for it, because, you know, when I, the whole goal when I started working at IGN was I actually wanted to be an editor. Mm-hmm. And, I had gotten this really weird opportunity to edit mobile games, and mm-hmm, I said no to it because at the time, smartphones weren't even around the corner yet.
Yeah.
And, well, they were, but we didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And you had Snake, you know, and
which was, to be fair, 10 out of 10.
That was a great game. It's still a great game.
What is the only game you've got? Yeah. So I was kind of like, I can't spend my time writing about this crap. So I said no. And then mm-hmm, I was like, well, shit. Am I allowed to say shit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Like, I can't, like, I just totally ruined my chances of getting my foot in the door, mm-hmm, and this, that, and the other thing. And so then I called back. I'm like, yeah, you know, I kind of would like to do that again, actually. I gave it some more thought. And they're like, it's gone. Sorry.
Like, oh, we've already given Snake Game of the Year.
Yeah.
It's over.
Exactly.
The first article.
So for like a week, I just was crying myself to sleep because I was like, I can't believe I just gave away this golden opportunity. And then they
called
me.
You're the
only
person to cry for not having to write for mobile.
I was just so bummed.
I can't believe.
So bummed. And then, well, I just was thinking, you know what? I'll go. I'll do mobile for a couple of years. I'll snake my way around somewhere.
That's why it's such a cultural milestone. It works its way into every conversation, guys.
Well, and then they end up calling me back for a different department. Called me back and were like, "Do you want to host?" And I've got a point that I'm trying that I'll get to. Do you want to host? I'm like, absolutely, totally hate being on camera. I'm like, absolutely. I moved out. I started doing it. I sucked. You know, I had this horrible Michigan accent. Like, I had no idea what I was doing.
It's also harder than you think, right? When you
first started. Yeah. Like, it's like, I get it. Yeah. Because I've had enough experience. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was just earth-shatteringly
difficult.
It's
definitely one of those things that people look at and they're like, I could do that. Jack, like, no, you can't.
Well, yeah, they say that, like Ryan Seacrest, everybody's like, it's like, dude, that guy, like, it's a hard
job
to be a good host.
How difficult that is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. And there's a variety of reasons. Yeah. Needless to say, you know, and I was always like, I didn't think, because it was so hard in the beginning, I was so nervous and I had said yes just to get that chance back. I was just like, oh, I don't know. Like, I everybody just sees me as a talking head. I should be doing editorial, like this, that, and the other thing. And now that I know more after mm-hmm. so many years, and especially after writing and all these other things and what goes on behind the scenes, I am so glad I have never assigned a score to a game. Like, yes. I'm fine reporting it,
yeah,
and I'm fine to give my personal opinions as a consumer.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd have ever be comfortable giving a score to a game because I haven't, well, I mean, I guess I have now, but I haven't made one, you know, like who am I to tell you or the reasons that you missed your kid's birthday because you were coding till 2 a.m. that your shit's wrong.
Yeah.
So I've, that's been the silver lining to that.
You also start learning because definitely, you know, I was on the IGN forums and stuff, and I would mm-hmm. be the Nintendo kid. Like, why the hell doesn't the sequel have this feature? But like, just put it in. And like, once you start, now I'm the opposite. Whenever I read people like say something, I'm like, are you fucking like, you can't just put it in. What do you mean just put it in? Like, that's a whole thing that they didn't do because they don't, you
ding ding ding.
Yeah.
Oh, now it's running.
Yeah. Why do we have to pay for DLC?
Well, it's just
because there's people who work and it costs money to make it. It's like, it's just mind blowing to me. But I would have been like that 10 years
ago. And there's also a certain attitude, I think, that you see. And it's just something I think new with what you get online, which is there's so much information that's instantly available to you. There's this weird attitude of like, it's like you see yourself as this paragon of knowledge and you see everyone else in whatever industry, politics, gaming, whatever, as you're like, why don't they just do that? It's like, it's so clear to me. Certainly these guys must be idiots. You know, so I remember you read these debates about it's like politics, like high level politics, where it's like NSA is doing this and that. And it's like, and I will put no opinion on this, but I do have friends who I consider some of the smartest people I know who are in Washington, D.C. and they work at the State Department stuff. And just like, and hearing them talk about it, it's like, oh, there's 10,000 things that you as the layperson don't even realize is mm-hmm. going on here. And you're just sitting here being like, well, it should be like that. It's like, what you don't realize is that's can't be because this, but you don't even think about it.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's this weird arrogance that you get sometimes.
Well, I think for gamers, it's that they're gaming. I mean, I love gaming. I think it's an art form. Like, I've always argued this, but it's definitely indulgent. Like, it's inherently, most of the time, an indulgent experience. Like, the game is designed to make you feel good and to make you progress. Mm-hmm. And a lot of art, like, challenges. And I think gamers, they're in that world so much that they just kind of start taking on a very entitled, like, a game should do what I want it to do. That's why people get upset when games have ambiguous endings, and they get upset if it's not exactly what they expect.
See, I agree with you, mm-hmm. and I think that you can't have your cake and eat it too. It has to be, if you want to see games as art, which is perfectly fine if that's the route you want to go down, but then as art, you're somewhat, you can have your own interpretation of it, but what you're going to get is what the artist gives you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can like or dislike it just fine, but you can't expect the artist to change it because of what you want, because you might be disappointed.
Yeah. People don't say, hey, Scorsese, change the end of your movie. Yeah. I didn't like it. It's like Mass Effect 3, I didn't like your ending. Well, too bad. I made the game. Like, that's my ending.
Yeah, that's what I chose
to
do.
Well, I paid for it. It's like, guess what? You pay for other things too. You know,
In my opinion, that's the risk of the consumer. You choose to be part of that storyline. And if you want to spend your money on that, unfortunately, that's the risk you take. It might not work out the way that you want it to.
Yeah.
I mean, a good example would be Stephen King in the Dark Tower series. He wrote a second ending, which I actually disagree with. I mean, in my opinion, both endings actually are good. I've read them both, and I mm-hmm. like them both. I prefer the first one, which is an ambiguous ending.
Yes.
And if I can't remember what it's called, but there's actually a writing style that is described as a, you know, it might even be ambiguous ending. I have no idea. But I, you know, it's just like, that's, I'm fine with that. Even if it left me with a bad feeling, I'm fine with that because it was about the journey and not about necessarily the ending.
Yeah.
And I chose to take that journey. Yeah. And he chose to write it his way.
He's the one who did it.
And then the flip side is, well, if you just see them as entertainment and that's your thing, well then, okay, that's fine. But then when something comes up, like people in the media that don't understand games, like, who was the movie critic?
Ebert.
Ebert.
Yeah.
Giving, you know, poo-pooing on the concept that games were art, and then everybody got all but hurt about it. It's like, well, what side are you on? Are you the game art side, or are you the entertainment side?
Yeah, it's it's fundamentally hypocritical to be like, games are art, and everything should serve everything that I want immediately. It's like, well, that's not really art.
Well, it's just that weird. It's like the same thing you'll see with comic books. Where like, comic books are art, and then they're like, why is everybody getting upset that all the covers are sexist? It's like you can't have both. It's like the weirdest, like, guys. Or it's like, well, video games are art. It's like, oh man, the latest Call of Duty is super cool. Like, why are people complaining there's no girls in it? It's like, the game industry is in such a weird state of mind where it's like, it really wants to be taken seriously. And we shouldn't even have to fight it. It's like, people who make good games like Amnesia and stuff like that, they're already doing it. You don't have to be so defensive about it.
Yeah. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe there's a little bit of something for everybody.
Yeah.
Certain games should be considered art and certain games shouldn't.
Yeah.
You know,
movies are the same way. Nobody looks at Transformers and they're like, yes, interesting. You know, it's like, well, maybe Armageddon, certainly piece of art, but Transformers too, maybe not so much.
Well, I think the downloadable titles helped a lot because it used to be every game had to be a $60 game that had to be
a commercial
$30 million to essentially even make it comparable. And now with PSN titles that can be 3 hours, 4 hours, like you're finally seeing kind of games branch out.
The small art house films,
exactly.
The video game industry. Yeah.
What is Daylight? Is it a full title? Because it's by Atlas now. Is it a full title? Is it going to be a downloadable title? Or unsure yet?
I'm kind of unsure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in full title. Do you mean like the length of time?
Or, I mean, I don't mean because
in the game, like,
or
how long
is it gonna be a retail title? I guess is it gonna be a disc based?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure, and I think that that's still up for debate. But as of right now, I know it's gonna be Steam and PS4, I'm obviously Steam. You don't need a physical copy. But for the other stuff, honestly, with the new consoles, do you really need physical copies for any games?
Disc-based. I'm sorry. Yeah. Did I just step into 2001?
To get back to writing, when you write it, is it like you are writing and then they kind of base the game off of it? Or is this kind of back and forth? Because they may change. Because like, even seeing a little bit of game development I saw, it's like, they may have a whole new level or a game design idea, then you have to kind of react to it. And
it's a kind of a combination of both. You know, we had had a lot of original meetings. We had a rough idea of what the outline was going to be. Mm-hmm. So I kind of stuck to that. And of course, things got edited or dropped and we changed a few things around. Yeah. But for the most part, we stuck to that, the rough idea of the outline. Based off that outline, I then wrote a script. Mm-hmm. And my script, you know, I have nothing else to compare it to because I've not been able to see other people's written work other companies at games because nobody's going to show me that. I have a few friends in the industry that are writers, and they said that sometimes they get as minuscule as actually writing, you know, hit B button for this. Like actual gameplay elements. Mine, and I don't know if it's just because it was the first time, I don't even know if I'm doing it right. I'm just doing it. So mine were gameplay suggestions and then written script. And then I would turn that into the developers and the art department. And then they would sort of piece together what they could do and had time to do and how that fit into the main storyline. Does that make sense?
Definitely interesting.
It's definitely a weird.
It was like a puzzle. It was like putting a puzzle piece together, and you had like three people working on it. Well, we had. Well, when we started, it was six, and I can't. I think we're up to 20. No, that seems really large. I don't know how many people we have working on it now, but there's still the main six people are still working on it.
Cool. Yeah. It's funny because there's no set form for it. I remember for
especially
us,
since it's randomly generated. So that makes it even like, well, where the hell are we with this? Yeah, so that was weird.
Yeah, it's like those like you sometimes see like the interactive movie type of scripts, and it's just these giant books of just like, and then in this case, go to here. It's like a weird choose your own adventure slash crazy. Yeah, just the structure is not set. So you kind of just be like, well, it makes sense here. I don't know. Kind of making it up as you go in terms of like format, which is, I think, very cool. And I think, you know, procedurally generated stuff has the greatest. See, to me, like that's that realm of games that, like, you know, it's like, okay, for a while it's like, okay, we gotta make graphics better. We gotta make keep pumping the graphics and keep pumping the, you know, what we can get there. And the two things to me that I was always just like, why aren't we working on this? Is, you know, AI and procedurally generated environments. And I think it literally took like Minecraft for people to be like, oh, this is, it's not just like procedurally generated. It was, people had such a narrow focus of like what it could be. And even Minecraft's implementations is very basic. Like, it's just the world and it's based off some math here. But like, being able to explore that and get the possibility of like, oh, I can just keep on going here. Because procedurally generated environments have been done. Like Dwarf Fortress had done that.
Well, we definitely have an ending of sorts.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that we want to have replayability, and obviously because it's an indie smaller title, you know, it's not going to be this grandiose, you know, sandbox experience. So you can't just explore the same thing over and over again. Right. So to keep that kind of freshness, we're trying. That's why we chose the randomly generated aspect of it, is so that you would find different items that you might not have found during your first playthrough, and then if you did find certain items again, maybe they'll be in a different spot, and so you know that hopefully leads you down a different path.
Well, what's interesting with horror is that it's a lot of times it's not necessarily that overarching thing can be set and be one thing, but that process of, you know, because horror is very much like a moment-to-moment thing a lot of times, right? It's very much like, you know, it's anticipation and build-up, and it's, oh, here comes something, and, you know, and environment and all that stuff. It's all these other things that are not dependent on a straight-ahead, linear, A to B narrative type of thing in order to get that experience.
Yeah, even one more reason to have it be this twist was because, you know, if you know that something's coming up after you're not going to be scared.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
The scare is gone, and so, you know, it's just, we just hope that it kind of pumps some extra blood into the title so that people feel like they've got a good, solid experience.
It's also
from
nice, like, if like Freddy's playing it, I'm playing it, and you can't anticipate too much, be like, oh, like, did this happen?
Did you do that? When you got to that one, do you know what I'm talking about?
Or even like if you're gonna check game FAQs, it would be different. Like, you couldn't like, and you couldn't know ahead of time everything that's gonna happen. Like, it feels more random.
And when you take,
and that
scarier.
Was actually something we thought about. Like, if people start uploading their experience like on YouTube, like they did with like Slenderman and stuff like that, we don't want to ruin those scares or that storyline for somebody that maybe stumbles upon that video but hasn't played the game. So hopefully, then if they do for whatever reason see a video like that, they will, one, want to get the game, and two, have a unique experience for themselves.
Thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. We're going to take a very short break. I just want to take a moment to tell you about our brand new sponsor. Today's Face Tracker podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website and online portfolio. take it from us. Building your own website is a huge pain in the butt. It took us forever to build Rocket Jump. It's a very difficult task, especially if you're an artsy, fartsy, creative type that like doesn't know how to code. Use the offer code Rocket Jump, sign up for a free trial, and you get 10% off your first purchase. These guys are great. It's all drag and drop, fully customizable. You can link your site right to your Facebook and Twitter profiles. Even a chump like you, John, can put together a great website in minutes.
Well, from what I hear, they've got tons of design templates and style options, and they update with new stuff all the time. You can even set up like a merch store in 2 seconds.
You got a bunch of merch you want to sell?
Not yet, but I will be now that I can use squarespace.com to easily sell my website.
You can. It's just that easy. Plus, there's this really cool feature where all the designs also come in the mobile version, so your site doesn't look like total garbage on an iPhone.
Also, if you need a little help, or if you just want someone to talk to because you're having a lonely Saturday night, they have an amazing customer support team. Over 100 people on call 24/7.
Thanks to Squarespace for supporting the show. Head over to squarespace.com and use the promo code ROCKETJUMP for a free trial and 10% off your first purchase. Again, just go try it out. Design your website. If you like it, then you buy.
All starting at $8 a month.
Don't even need a credit card to get started.
Squarespace, it's everything you need to make a kick-ass website.
Hey guys, how's it going? Jimmy Wong, aka Ted from VGHS here, telling you to check out shop.rocketjump.com. We've got brand new merchandise like iPhone cases and iPad decals to shirts, Blu-rays, and posters, including brand new Season 2 designs from our friends at Danger Brain. There's also the incredibly popular VGHS hoodie, and some of our older shirts are on sale for a great price. So make sure you check it out right after this podcast at shop.rocketjump.com. Thanks so much, guys.
And, you know, the history of procedural generation in the horror genre.
Wow, that got heavy really quick.
Yeah, it did. It's like, what? But there were some early sort of lightweight examples of that. I'm a PlayStation game called Clock Tower. You guys remember that one?
I remember Clock Tower. Remember Clock Tower? Yes. I played, gosh. Yeah, with the mass murderer, that the like flesh face man with the hammer
the axe
or something.
Giant scissors.
Maybe I played Clock Tower 2 then.
Clock Tower 2, maybe, yeah. Well, Clock Tower was originally also an SNES game, a Super Famicom game. And what's interesting, it's a Super Nintendo thing. It's like you were a bunch of people. So you weren't just one person. You were a bunch of people stuck in like a castle or a house. I don't remember what it was exactly. But there's this villain. He's a dude with a giant pair of scissors who will come and eviscerate you, but you never know when he's coming. So that whole time you're playing through it, and it's just like, you might not see him. Or they might just throw him at you out of nowhere. And it's like, and your characters can die because it's like, if you get caught and you try and run away from him and hide, and amnesia almost, it's kind of interesting because this is a concept that was in Clock Tower that amnesia kind of played around with, which is the idea of like there's the monster and then you hide from the monster, but the monster could get you or, you know, and that side of it. And so there's also mini procedural gameplay bits within this sort of larger like collection, grab the book and the key for this room.
There's another game that was all procedurally generated and, it was really fast, and you never knew when the monster would come. And when it came, you essentially were dead. It was terrifying. It was called Ski Free.
Ski Free, yeah, the original. Ski Free.
I don't remember that.
You know, like Ski Free. You were downhill ski. You just went down a hill on skis, and then a Yeti would come and end the game.
Seriously?
Yeah, but you never knew when it was coming. It wasn't a scary game, but like this little monster would come running down the hill.
Well, Matt,
you
know that you can outrun the Yeti.
It's super hard. No, you can't forever. We were watching the YouTube video of like the guy who's done it the longest, and it's really impressive how long he gets away from the Yeti. anyways, I would
Matt, you horrible.
You know which one I've been
game.
Playing recently that I really, really like is that Stanley Parable.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, so
I played that like 3 times.
Good.
Yeah.
It's, you know what it is actually? Because everybody always talks about what's the game for non-gamers? And they're like, Portal's the game for non-gamers. Like, yeah, right. Are you kidding?
My
like,
mom's going to play
my
Portal.
My mom would have no idea what the hell's going on here.
Yeah. I would say like but Uncharted
Parable,
3 is the, you know, or 2 is the, yeah.
For watching, but for playing, the Stanley Parable kind of really works for even from someone just completely unfamiliar because it kind of plays around with the, you know, the narrative.
You definitely gain a lot from playing games, but yeah.
You do, yeah.
I didn't realize because I just assumed like the paths were pretty much like the left door and the right door and like going into the basement or not. But then I was looking at the whole branching like system. Yeah. There's like going inside, there's all this shit I didn't even know you could do.
Yeah.
Like going inside like vents and like not doing anything. Yeah, there's like a vent.
What?
Yeah, you should look at the whole branch. There's like so many more choices than I thought.
So I've been streaming it on Twitch, you know, because I wanted to grab my own Twitch handle before eventually the merging will happen and it shows up on Xbox and somebody snags it. Like, haha, you bitch, I got your thing. So I snagged it. Plus, I just kind of, you know, I just wanted to be doing it for a while. So,
yeah.
Needless to say, point is, playing it, thought like I was doing it right, which I guess you are doing it right. There's no wrong way to play the yeah. Stanley Parable. But then all of a sudden the commenters were like, you can jump down onto that walkway. And I'm like, what? And then there's like five more hours of gameplay that I never even knew existed. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing.
I need to go. And the ending, that game's great. I freaking love that game. I got one good ending.
Uh-huh. I've got many bad endings. Yeah. And then, gosh, I'd have to go back and look. I think the first one, a few achievements.
I was like, the first one I just was in an endless circle. I went down the basement where that car is. And then it turns into like space and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think the second time I played, I escaped. I just kept not doing what they told me to do. And then you get to escape.
That's a life lesson, man. Yeah. Take that home with you. Run with it.
But then it's like, it's not even that good of an ending because like, you just realize all of existence is like a lie. It's like really weird and meta, right? It's like, they're just like, as you're in the game, like they just present it as like, oh, this
Have you seen the Minecraft one?
No.
The Minecraft ending?
No, what's that?
There's a Minecraft
ending. Really?
Well, there's a Minecraft, I don't know if you would consider it an ending. There is a decent sized Yes, it ends. I believe it does. Well, the Minecraft section ends, but I think you end up somewhere else, but I can't remember if it's ending as in it restarts you from the beginning of the game or
which
you just are back into the real world.
The real world.
But,
it ends because you look at Minecraft and you're like, I gotta get building.
Is that
again.
Unique to all tab?
I actually was like,
Minecraft
this is
again.
Pretty cool. I should really download Minecraft.
Minecraft's really weird in that way. Minecraft's a game that you keep going back to because there's a different part of you that's like, yeah, I really want. Oh man, I had an idea for a house.
Yeah,
I don't have the patience for it.
Yeah, it goes, but it goes, and then you're done.
Yeah,
but then something. Yeah, I don't know. There's something.
And then you'll see those YouTube videos where people built like ridiculously amazing stuff, and you're just like, oh, why am I not that creative? I went to art school. I should be doing this. And then I'll turn it on. I'm like, but I'm bored.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the future architects, the Mies van der Rohe's and the Frank Lloyd Wrights are all at
home
playing Minecraft and making weird stuff, and they're gonna take one of these in 20 years. You're gonna see. It.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
That or they'll just never leave their living room.
That's true.
Or they'll just
continue to make buildings. Everything will be one story.
They'll make beautiful buildings, but
in the world of
Minecraft.
Actually, yeah. Minecraft will take over the world. And that's where all our tourism will be. Was within the world of Minecraft. Yeah, is that too? One or the other.
That could be it.
Statement that I made was still true. It just doesn't matter. You know, the ramifications of real life society might be a little bit different. That's all.
So you're at the Xbox. What do you think of the new consoles? You're at the Xbox launch.
Well, the Xbox One is the only one that I have right now. Mm-hmm. I missed out on the PS4. We just never pre-ordered it. But Xbox One, because we had gone to the launch, mm-hmm. We kind of just lucked out that way. But I know everybody. How do I want to put this?
Straight. And to the point.
So I have no problem with the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with the PS4.
Yeah.
I think it really totally depends on as like your personal choice. Do you want a primarily gaming system or do you want a more of an entertainment system? You know, at the end of the day, because I'm in the business, I'll probably end up having
both.
So I'm a little biased, but, or, you know, jaded. I don't know, not really jaded, but you get what I'm saying.
You don't got any skin in the game. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, I feel like my opinion's not necessarily as valid as maybe some others that are spending their hard-earned money on it and can only afford one system. That being said, I do not worry about the Xbox One, the whole NSA, it's always on and staring at you, because my thought process on that is, do you realize how much you're already being watched? You have
a phone. Is that seriously? Are people not
buying
it because of that?
Well, I mean, not even not buying it.
Just scared of it.
I just think that the knee-jerk reaction is maybe a little unwarranted.
Yeah, I've definitely heard people have come up and be like, you know that
and
it's going to be looking at you.
At the end of the day, get some fucking tape and tape over the camera then. What? Like, if you really are that concerned and the off button's not making you feel any better, then just tape over it.
And I'll go one step further. It's like, tape over it and you're using PGP on all your email, right? And you're not tweeting and you don't have a Facebook account, right?
Exactly.
Right.
And you don't use your iPhone for anything because each tower can track you and they can tell what conversations you're having. Oh, and FYI, there's something called Google Maps and Street View that can fucking find you anywhere on the face of the planet. So are you really worried?
Well, I guess it is,
you know?
You can be. Go ahead and be really worried, but you don't get to just do one aspect of like alleviating it. Like you follow through.
And
you
like
hypocrite.
The most innocent one, they might watch me playing my Halo.
Yeah,
like that's the extent of what they could do.
It's like, and from what? And from that trying to infer terrorist activity. No, your emails will tell them that, you know?
Yeah. Now, to play devil's advocate to myself, I actually had a great conversation at coffee today about, and I had mentioned, you know, like, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's ridiculous, blah, 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 blah. And they brought up a really good point. And they said that I think there was a game on the three, or no, it was actually a PlayStation 3 title, and they had an eye toy, and I can't remember the name.
Was it like a fitness game?
No, okay. It wasn't. It was, I think, a racing game. Mm. And they had the game that they were racing against. What it would do is it would automatically access your eye toy without notifying you. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is if you drove someone off the road, it might have been, I mean, I'm just guessing.
It was burnout.
You drove somebody off the road.
This sounds great.
They would take a picture of the person that you destroyed at the moment that you destroyed them, and then show it to you.
Yeah.
And the thing is that they were playing, and they didn't even realize that it had accessed their iToy. And all of a sudden, they drove this random dude off the road, and what pops up is this huge, hairy, half naked, like overweight, sweaty dude on his couch, all like. and they're just like, oh my god, like what? And so that's where, and he's like, you know, I don't want that to happen, and I don't want that to happen to me, you know, like what if I decide I want to play in my underwear one day with a beer in my hand, am I gonna have to worry about this? And I'm like, listen, I totally get it, that's a very valid point. So I would say for the people that are against that always on thing, like, I totally get it.
Yeah,
I hear what you're saying. And I would strongly suggest to game developers, publishers, Microsoft itself, whomever's the one that would be in charge of making that decision, like, just be upfront from the get-go.
It's opt-in notification.
Make it opt-in. Don't sneak it in there. Don't, you know, like, just...
The problem is that nobody knew it was happening. I remember they patched it really quickly. They were like, you had to say, yes, I'm okay with it taking my picture. And even on the other side, you had to say, yes, I want to see other people's pictures. They defaulted it all off.
I feel like as long as you're as long as you're honest with it, then that's fine. And then that's where I don't have a problem with the Xbox One. For the PS4, you know, I feel like Xbox has just as decent titles. But the one thing I do really enjoy about the PS4 is how supportive they are of the indie scene.
Yeah, the whole PlayStation
and they have some
and
beautiful, beautiful games, and the fact that they even have Contrast.
Yeah.
Straight out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate that. I really like it. I'm getting more and more into those games, especially now that I don't really have a lot of time to spend on a huge ass title to play.
That's what we were talking about. This, like, if a game's 3 hours, like, I will like play that
thing
so fast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
5 hours for me is perfect.
Yeah.
I feel like I've spent enough time that I got my money's worth.
Yeah.
But it hasn't gone by so fast that I feel kind of left wanting. Five hours is enough. You know, something like Skyrim is kind of a different beast.
You're playing
but
4 months.
Yeah. People that are like, oh, well, you know. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of an example. There was one recently.
Like, as like a kid, like all the adventure games, like Zelda's and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah,
or even
huge.
Like Nintendo. Like, they're all like 20, 30 hours. Like, that's what you
but
wanted.
But the thing is, it's just
like,
it's like,
I can't do
to me,
that.
It's like, it's
I don't
money
need it
too.
Anymore.
It's like, how many dollars per hour am I spending? And it's like, what's a movie now? What, $20 to get in there for like an hour and a half? So,
it's
if
like Braid was like 3 hours.
Perfect.
It's $15. Everybody was screaming. It's like, it's longer than it's a
my
movie.
My thing is, as long as you walk away from the game, no matter how long or short it is, feeling like you got your money's worth because you enjoyed the experience of playing that game, then that is what was perfect for that game.
I'll pay $100 for a game that doesn't piss me off.
Yeah. And there was I wish I would remember the title. There was a game really recently that, you know, kind of extended itself a little too far. And I'm like, we didn't even need the extra time on that. And people still complained that it was too short. And I was like, what are you talking about? It could have been like an hour shorter.
Yeah.
But that's always been, that's always actually
most
been
people
my
just
experience
play games is the problem.
Well, and also that's been my experience too. Like, games could always be a little shorter. You know what I mean? There's always like, it's always like, yeah, okay.
It's hard for me to finish a game now.
Yeah.
I don't finish very many.
This is sad.
I remember as a kid, and I loved video games. I played them all the time. Now
Be honest, though. I mean, I'll be honest. Not be honest. I mean, I'll be honest. Even then, as a kid, I very rarely finished games because I was a kid and I was doing other stuff
other
as a kid.
Cool stuff to do.
Not me,
like,
played video games.
Doing stuff. I was very proud that I finished Super Mario Brothers 2, though. That was the one I actually finished it. It took me forever, made it even more important when I finished it because technically the system belonged to my brother because it was in his room. So he was like a total a-hole about it and like, you can't play that in my room, blah, 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 blah. So I kind of had to sneak it on the sly. I remember finishing it running downstairs crying and being like, I did it. I did it. And my mom's like, did what? Did what? And I was like, so happy. I'm like, I finished Super Mario Brothers 2. And she's like, huh? I'm like, you don't understand me.
And 2 had the trippy, weird dream ending, yeah. Too, right?
It is weird.
Yeah, and the desert and like going down in the vase.
Oh, gosh.
Gosh, and that was like one of the worst ones, too, because you'd start going, you'd get the rhythm, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And all of a sudden, you'd, wham, you like run into a wall. And like, no.
Yeah, it's a heavy game. Yeah. It's
tough. Were your parents supportive of playing video games when you were young? Or was that like.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
They were...
I feel like now people are. Like, my parents, they are now, and I feel like most parents understand it now, but I think we're in the time period where, like, it was still a little weird for your kids to be playing games.
Yeah. No,
go outside,
were...
bicycle. Yeah. We got that bike.
So we started with Atari 2600, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then slowly over time, we were always a couple years behind, but mm-hmm. eventually we got, like, NES, SNES, mm-hmm. and it was always Nintendo consoles. We never had Sega or anything like that, and when Sony came out, we didn't have any PlayStation stuff. I think, in fact, the last system that my parents got us as, like, a Christmas present or something was, mm-hmm. like, the N64, mm-hmm. and I was in college at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, they supported it in the sense that, you know, we'd always have one in the house.
Yeah.
You know, but they also were very much like, you only have so much time mm-hmm. with it per week.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even a daily thing. Like, really? you only had so much
time
with it.
The rationing went off on the week.
Lots
gave
of
gave a little flexibility over the weekends, yeah. I see.
But
yeah.
the thing that kind of burned me was that even if I was the one asking for it for Christmas, my brother was the one that would get it.
Oh.
So, because they would say, well, your brother wants one, so we're just going to get it for him. Because, you know, in their mind, I'm sure they never said it, but in their mind, I'm sure they thought, oh, he's the boy. So,
yeah,
why?
Video
yeah.
games.
Get it at video games. So they were, but they weren't,
yeah.
and, you know, more power to them. Looking back on it now, that was probably the best course to take.
yeah.
Although I do still am like, what the hell? The fact that they always bought it for my brother and not me, and have made that point abundantly clear now that I'm older and actually working and making a career out of video game the video game industry.
Yeah. Well, that's the weird thing on the holidays is that my little cousins will come up and they'll be like, Matt, like, or like they all have strict times. Like, they only play an hour, like a week or something.
Oh, man.
My uncles and aunts, they all like, well, no, they love me, but they all hate me because they'll be like, Matt, how many video games do you play, Matt? And I have to, I'm like, and I'll be honest, I'll be like, I'm sorry, uncles. It's like, I played all day.
That's my life, baby.
And now it's my career and I'm doing fine. Like, it's all good. And they're like, oh, man.
That's
my favorite thing. Because my dad was like,
what are
you
doing? I'm not going to lie to your kids.
Oh, that was my favorite thing.
That's what happened.
My dad would be like, go outside or something. And he'd be like, what are you doing? He's like, this is poison. This video game is going to be poison. You can't make any money from doing this. I was like, wrong, Dad.
Yeah.
Guess what?
I think all of us in this business have that moment where we're like, I can't wait to make this phone call.
Yeah.
You call up, you're like, hey,
guess what?
I'm totally being successful right now playing
video games.
And I will say,
and it feels good. It does.
Yeah.
I'm all about revenge, no matter how long it takes, and
petty,
I will wait.
We'll do it.
I am so petty. Yeah, absolutely.
And I will say though, the one thing that I kind of actually I don't regret. Not playing video games. Let me sort of make that clear. What I mean is, like, I actually, the memories from my childhood, though, I forget everything about video games during that time period.
I actually have an opposite story.
Really? Okay.
So my dad used to travel a lot because he was a salesman at the time mm-hmm. for whatever company he was working for. And so we never saw him. I think we, you know, he'd be home 1 week out of every month. So that's the time that we had with him. And it was so, I think what got me into gaming in the first place and what even got me interested is because we had the Atari, he would actually play like pinball with us.
Oh.
Like, you know, and I'm 7. Mm-hmm. So it was like a big deal that dad, who I didn't really see very often, not only took the time to hang out with us in the first place, but hang out with us doing something that we thought was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Not that what the parents, like, we're going to drag you to a museum or, you know, we're going to take you to the library.
Yeah.
It was like, you know what? I'm going to watch some cartoons with you and I'm going to sit and play some video games with you, kid. And that was just like, whoa. Like,
yeah, that's awesome.
My dad thinks that my stuff is really rad.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, rad. It was 1980 something. So that kind of, I think, that's where my big,
interesting,
like, happy family young memory
for
comes
video
from.
Games. Yeah. I remember my dad, he didn't really care one way or the other, but we were obsessed with Ocarina of Time.
And it was the best game of all time. That's my favorite, dude, my favorite
there
game.
There you go, best game. So you got the new Zelda for today?
Yes, I
there
do.
There you go. That's what I'm doing after this. But I was like, we were like, Dad, you have to play Ocarina of Time. He never played any games with us. And it was like a kind of a good bonding moment. My dad was like, yeah, I'll play with you guys. And we like 3 days in a row, we sat with him and we played through the game. He didn't know how to use the controller and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then my older brother came like on the weekend. He's like, I'm going to start Ocarina of Time. He just deleted my dad's save file and started playing. He didn't know we had been playing with him. I remember the moment so vividly. Where
that
we
is
all,
such a dick move.
Well, he didn't know. He just, because he saw three hearts.
But here's the thing. he does know. Because you know what? You just don't ever delete.
Well, to be fair, there's three brothers, and it's like I always had the top file because I played the most games, and my younger brother at the bottom because he was younger than me. And then Jeff, he wouldn't play many games, but if he did, he had the third one, and he just saw three
stars. I'm going to say this. Did your dad replace Link's name with his own name?
He did.
All right, so it's been called.
That's true. You're right. He did it on purpose. My dad came in, we sat down, he clicked on the save file, and he's just like, what happened? And then he'd never played a game, he didn't understand save files, and it was just so devastating.
Like,
he was like, it's all gone? He was like explaining like death for the first time. He's like, Jeff must have saved it over. He's like, no. And then that's it. He would never play it again. And we're like,
man.
And yeah, he's like, everything he did, he was so interested in the characters. He's like, so
he was at that fishing hole for hours.
He was almost there. So
he almost got the big fish. Yeah.
We never played a game with us again. Like, except for Monkey Ball, which was just us watching my dad fall over and over again.
I once got a fish this big. Oh, where, Tom? Oh, well, this little place called Hyrule.
Pretty much. And never played again.
That's
it was
a horrifying story.
It was sad.
Yeah,
that's
He probably doesn't. It was probably more terrifying to us as kids. My dad's like, I don't need to delete this save file. I'm done. Don't have to play this game anymore.
My dad, so he used to hang out and play with us then, but now he still does. Like, we bought him a 360 for Christmas a couple years, and a PlayStation 3 a couple years ago, and he got, all of a sudden I get this text in the middle of the night because he forgets the time change, and he's like, yeah, so I'm playing this game called Uncharted 2, and I really like it, and I was just wondering, do you think you could give me a copy of Uncharted 3? Like,
oh, that's awesome.
And I'm like, did you see my new IGN video on the dashboard? He's like, no. Okay, cool. I guess I'll get you some free games.
I guess I'll get you free games.
Copy of Uncharted 3, Dad.
That's awesome.
That's cool, Dad.
How do you have
Thanks.
Time for all this gaming?
I don't. So I've really, and that's actually what I'm feeling like right now. It's weird. You know, I took a huge amount of time off because of the baby, and then G4 went, it couldn't have been worse timing. Like, you get pregnant, G4 goes under, you know, IGN, I ended up moving, so I didn't really work there anymore. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then the baby comes, and that was its own, like, holy shit. The
video game.
The first 4 months with kids, man, they're awesome, but they're hard.
You said awesome, but your eyes just turned dead. Vietnam vet, just like, they're awesome.
So
your eyes
just turned dead.
Like, sir, I would get up every hour to feed this kid.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're just a zombie. I mean, if it's really the sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what I've figured out. Like, if somebody wants to torture the shit out of me, they just need to fuck with me sleeping.
Yeah.
And I was barely making it through. I mean, I was turning gray. Like, so I was barely making it out.
So real baby versus really loud Tamagotchi.
Well, it's about the same. It's about the same,
very
actually.
Similar.
So, you know, there was a huge chunk of time there when I was not only just not in the game anymore, really, but also completely wrapped up in dealing with trying to get through life.
Yeah.
So now I'm finding myself with Nerdist and a couple other projects, and then with the Daylight thing, kind of creeping back in. And but I feel like I've missed a huge chunk, and I'm really far behind. And so that's, and also because now with the baby, while I do manage to squeeze in some gaming, it's usually late at night. I'm really regretting it in the morning because I'm super tired because the kid wakes up at like 5 a.m. And you know, it's just like, but I love it so much, I just refuse to give it up. So the way that I've figured it out is a lot of mobile games when I was pregnant and when I just had him, tons of mobile games, and. A lot. I will only, as of right now, I will only play games I'm really interested in or a game that I need to do specifically for work.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you know, I really got to just narrow it down. Not because I don't want to play everything,
yeah.
but just because I really, truly only have time for specific stuff. So I want to enjoy the time that I have.
Of course.
And so I'm getting really, I'm pretty good at like really just sticking to that game plan, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. so to speak.
Speaking of awesome. Game plans, yeah. I'm always curious about this. How are you going to introduce video games? What's the order?
Oh, to the kid? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, what's the order? Do you have a game plan for the games?
As soon as possible.
Are you going to start with old gen stuff so that they can like, you know, maybe like appreciate the fact that there was a graphical shift?
You know, I've never, you know, I figure, honestly, just because he can barely move his thumbs, you know, I'm probably going to have him do, well, for one, he's already watching stuff on the iPad.
Like that seems to be a universal thing right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we
sure.
keep it pretty dialed back because, you know, he's still so young. He's still, like, his brain's still developing. His yeah. eyes are still developing. Yeah. You know, there's not been a ton of studies done on, like, what that kind of yeah. exposure and how close mm-hmm. that exposure is
to a kid's
face.
A lot of it has to do with distance. Focal distance
exactly.
is what makes you...
So we're doing it yeah. really quickly, but he's all about it, man. He sees a flashy screen and he's like, like, it's weird. He
Have
gets
you done, like,
so
Leapfrog or, like, the kid-specific consoles?
Kid-specific stuff. In fact, yeah. I think we're going to get him for Christmas. We're going to get him... basically, it's like a Leapfrog. It's like a kid's iPad.
Okay,
you know, like,
yeah.
all they have is, like... kid-only apps on
edutainment.
And it's like built like a brick so they can't break it.
Yeah.
Spill your apple juice on it. All
but
good.
You know, we'll probably save mm-hmm. the Wii U that we have and he'll probably start there.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
And some Kinect games that are kids-based and then go from there. I mean, but I'm definitely going to be watching him not only with like parental controls are going to happen at my house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he will only be able to buy games that he's legally of age to buy. And I will be tracking all of his comments and what he visits on the internet. I am going to install a key tracker.
You'll
on
be the NSA
computer.
For him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Fuck with that. Like, he has no idea. And that's the thing. Like, that's what drives me nuts, too, when I hear parents complain about how video game, well, the, just the, yeah. you know, U.S. in general, like video games are the things that are destroying our kids and this, that, and the other thing. It's like, no, you know what's destroying our kids and why they're acting this way is because you as a parent are not taking the time to educate yourself on technology that is not going to go away anytime soon because you're either scared of it or you're lazy.
Yeah.
And neither of those are good excuses.
Yeah.
You know, there's parental controls on the systems themselves. Then you need to have a license to even buy the games, and all the games are rated age appropriate. Like, for you to be uneducated and not have any idea what it is that your kid is doing is complete and utter bullshit.
It's true. Well, there's a lot of excuses where it's always like, well, they're at school, they're going to see that stuff anyways. But like, my parents, and like, I'm not, but both my parents are very Christian, and my dad even wanted to be a priest. And like, there was never an attitude of like, oh, they're going to hear this at school. I'd be like, I know my kid's going to hear this stuff at school. I know he's going to watch rated R movies. I know he's going to find porn. He's a kid.
Yeah.
But he can find it there, not at your house.
Exactly. And he contextualized it. It wouldn't be in the house. And then he'd be like, look, you know, like he'd discuss it. He wouldn't just ignore it and then just be like, well, you know, they're going to,
Well, the thing is, and
parents
the thing
don't
is
like to be blamed, though. Which, well,
but
fair enough. But,
yeah, but here's the interesting
thing. Listen, I have got a new appreciation of how tough it is and how hard it is. Like, I get it. But at the same time, you can't be lackadaisical and just use these as excuses because you don't want to take the time out of your busy schedule to do it. Hey, everybody's busy, but unfortunately, you shouldn't have had the kid if you didn't have the time to raise them. So
survival horror, what's the first one?
Survival
horror? I was going to be the first, if your kid had to play Zelda right now, what would you introduce them to?
Oh, right now, probably Ocarina. I mean, it really is my favorite.
Yeah.
And the other ones were so hard. Like, if he wanted to, screw around because he's just wants to see this thing run on the TV, then I would
That'd
be one
the
of the older
makes
ones.
Sense. Good
but
choice.
If
makes
he
sense.
Actually wants to play through something and like attempt to finish it, I probably would introduce him to Ocarina.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. Awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Holding off on survival horror for the moment. Cool. So, well, what else you got going on here? Let's throw
little
some plugs around. Yeah.
Old Nerdist News,
right,
which is huge. We're just starting with it, so we're still growing. But I think that the people that we're working with, a lot of them are just Nerdist.com, you know, people. But also some of them are G4 people that have joined Nerdist, and so it's like a great, like, accumulation of talent. And I think it's just going to keep getting better and better. And I also really like it because instead of me just being that quick talking head in front of a prompter thing, like I get a little bit more personality mm-hmm. into it. So for me, it's a lot of fun. So there's that. Then there's obviously Daylight, which mm-hmm. I don't think that a release date has been announced, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be very quickly in 2014.
Okay.
So not too far off. And then, you know, I do my own Twitch TV thing, which has absolutely no rhyme or reason to it yet because I just started and barely anybody's on there. But I'm learning the program and I try to do at least once a week.
Awesome.
Usually it's me drinking wine and getting hammered, and then we play some games and do a little Q&A at the end because I'm just drunk, so why not? And then Jenny's like, you know, and then everything else is just Twitter.
All right. Where can we find you? Where can we find you on Twitter?
So Twitter is Jessica_Chobot, Chobot. And
and when can everyone see Nerdist News?
So Nerdist News, thank you. That was thank you for that. I should have been able to remember to do that. So Nerdist News is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, roughly around 3 or 4, depending on how long the episodes are, because then you gotta upload it and edit mm-hmm. it and all that stuff. But roughly around 3 or 4 o'clock each day. And you can find that either on Nerdist.com or YouTube.
/Nerdist.
Right? /Nerdist, yeah.
All right. Cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much
for
coming.
Thanks, guys. Anytime. I'm right next door. Yeah, hey, so just hit me up. I might come over for pizza.
There you go.
Anytime.
We got so much pizza here, guys. I don't even know. It's like a pizza dream house over here. Woo!
Thanks, Justin.